Off the ball, rugby.
Obviously, when you're training and playing with Robbie Henshaw, Gary Ringrose, Gibson Park inside you, all that kind of stuff, he's going to see the level that they're at. And
join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
So it was a disappointing week results-wise for the Republic of Ireland with the back-to-back defeats to Sweden in the European Championship qualifiers. But one player who certainly came out of the games with her reputation enhanced was Irish defender Caitlin Hayes. And I'm delighted that Caitlin is on the line. How are you keeping, Caitlin?
Not too bad, thank you, Nathan.
It's only, 48 hours since the game in Stockholm came to an end. Where in the world are you?
Made it back to Glasgow last night, so it's been nice to be home.
How are you reflecting on the two matches?
Yeah, of course, like you said, it's disappointing. It's disappointing not to come back with anything, but I think if you always look at sport with a negative connotation, I think it could become quite overwhelming very quickly. And look, we're playing some of the best teams in the world in that group, and ultimately performance matters, and performance is something you've got to focus on. And there's definitely a lot of positives to take and move forward into the next game with.
The debate since the two games has been mainly around the style of play and maybe the contrast in the style of play between the two matches and which Ireland should be looking to bring forward, the more aggressive front foot football of Friday night at home, creating chances, but maybe that bit more open at the back against the quality of Sweden, who were just so clinical, or the more controlled type performance that we saw in Stockholm, where don't create a lot of chances, but don't give up a lot of chances. As a defender, where do you fall?
I think I could say that thankfully it's not me that has to make those decisions. I'm comfortable in playing with both styles, just like the rest of my teammates. It doesn't fall to me, but like I said, I think if we were a bit more clinical at the game at the Aviva, I think it could have been a very different outcome. We all know how the first team on the score sheet can affect the game more. And obviously taking that giant step forward and getting on the score sheet first always helps the team, whether that's just with confidence ultimately. So I think that game could have gone in. We could have gone in at halftime, definitely a different team. And I also don't really think that the scoreline reflects the game very well. I think we were in it more than a 3-0 defeat kind of shows. So I'm fine with the expansive. I'm fine with the back three. Ultimately, it gives Katie more opportunities, I guess, to go forward. But like I said, when Ireland need to sit back and defend, it takes a lot to get through that. And some would say we were unlucky to concede from that corner in the second game, and we could have come away with a 0-0 and a point on the board ultimately. But everyone will have a different opinion, and ultimately it only matters of what our coaches tell us. So, yeah, I'm going to stay on the fence for that question.
Katie's role, as I'm sure you're aware, has always been a topic of very hot debate, and how you manage to get the best out of her. How much of your game plan, because she is, you know, operating at such a high level for club and just her individual performances as well, she's of such importance. How much of your game plan is built around trying to get the best out of her?
I don't necessarily think it is built around her. I think the coaches probably have those discussions behind closed doors away from us as players. In terms of discussing where they see her playing and who they want ultimately around her to provide her the ball. And as great as Katie is, and I'm a number one fan, and I'll beat that drum every time when it comes to her praises, there's other players around in that team that can also pull off a worldie of a moment, aren't necessarily in the limelight as much, but ultimately it's a team game, like I said, but I'm sure those conversations go on behind closed doors, but it's not necessarily something we focus on as a team, because there's faith there in all the team that ultimately can play football.
The players are long past pats on the back at this stage for decent performances. Like the criticism has come in from four defeats from four and where we can improve and what we can do better. It does feel, though, that we do have to remind ourselves that the three teams in the group are among the best teams in the world, not just right now, but there are three countries that have thrown resources into the women's game for years and years and years in a way that we simply haven't in this country. And as much as Ireland have taken giant steps forward over the last couple of years to be competing at this level. We still actually have a way to go.
Yeah, and look, I'm all for one of listening to people sing not only my praises personally, but the team's personal praises. But also with that, you've got to take the opposite side of those praises, which is the negativity and ultimately the negative outlook. But you've hit the nail on the head. Those teams are far more progressed in terms of even just things like resources and the foundation of which those girls have grown up in within their country. Obviously, from my accent, you can tell that I didn't necessarily grow up in Ireland and on the grassroots of Ireland. But there's definitely a long way to go from listening to girls that obviously are on those stages now. And like I said, it's ultimately something that's going to take a couple more years. I guess when you qualify for your first World Cup, then that bar's set, and then ultimately you're expected to kind of fight against those teams. But yeah, like I said, you hit the nail on the head with in terms of there's a long way to go for Ireland. But credit to these players that they're putting themselves in situations where you're having to compete against the world's best, and that's ultimately what we want to continue to do and qualify for the Euros.
Personally, you must be very satisfied with how the last 9 months has gone since the World Cup, with how you've been able to establish yourself in the team, particularly in a position where there's so much competition. You look back to the World Cup and the three centre halves, I think, over 300 caps between them at that stage, all still around. Aoife Mannion has arrived in, Anna Patton has arrived in, you're there as well. There's just such competition to not just establish yourself in the team, but to be getting a level of performance that, you know, you're getting player of the match on Friday night. You just look to the manor born when it comes to international football.
Yeah. Well, look, Nathan, if you'd have told me this time last year that I would have been playing for Ireland and have, I think it's 12 caps now, I would have probably told you were a liar. It's something I wanted for so long. I've not shut up about it to anyone at Celtic, and I was always doing extra with my strength and conditioning coach at the time. And I would just tell him, it's going to come. It's surely going to come. And in the days where I would doubt, the coach at the time, Fran, would be like, no, it'll come. It's just a patient game you've got to play. And when I got a call up, I would have happily have provided the water and been the water girl on that team. And then to obviously get a starting position and to keep hold of it for the time that I've entered to now is something that I can't even put into words. It's honestly a dream come true. And look, I know I don't have the accent, but I definitely have the heart for this country. And to leave my all on that field is something that I will never not do, because I think that badge deserves to be hired with the highest representation.
I wouldn't worry about the accent. I think there have been many, many players from the northwest of England who have represented that green jersey very, yeah, very well down through the years. It's a very well-worn path at this stage.
I know. I just obviously wish that I sounded a little nicer on the ears like yourself. But no, it's honestly, it brings great pride to myself and my family to each and every time. And that'll be something that'll never be taken lightly.
So what is the connection with Ireland? Where does it go back to?
So my granddad is from Offaly on my dad's side. So I grew up in Ireland, and more so Ireland rugby shirts, I won't lie, but and then obviously that's where the Celtic connection comes in. So when I had the opportunity to sign with Celtic, it was a dream come true, and I told my dad by getting him the Celtic shirt that was the one that they wore at the time, and he just couldn't believe it, and it was almost like the full thing just came to fruition when obviously I got into the Ireland setup. And yeah, so my granddad's from Offaly, and that's something I'm proud of, and obviously something that gets me into the Ireland national team.
Yeah, the generation before you, I think, in that area of England would have spent a lot of time in the Irish clubs and gone in on the Sunday, and the Irish dancing would have been to the fore and the matches would have been on the telly. I'm not sure if that was quite as relevant when you were growing up, but was it very much you were growing up in an Irish household? It was a big part of your life?
I think it was more 50-50. Like I said, when I went to my mum's parents' house, it was get that off and put this on type of thing. But I do remember fondly always knowing what my colour was, and it was green. And and I was proud of that. No matter where I went, I knew that the shirt that I chose to wear, whether it be a Celtic or Ireland top, it demanded a standard even at that age. And that's something that I talk about with Celtic over here, is that I still remember those days of wearing that top, and it was something weird within me that just knew that that shirt was heavier than most, and it was something that I found joy in wearing. So
yeah,
no, unfortunately I've not got the rhythm of an Irish dancer. Still yet to learn that, but yeah, just very proud of the heritage of my family.
Give it a few more camps and they'll have you up and running, no doubt. I didn't realise the Celtic side of it was that important to you as well. Like, talk about living out your dream then, that, you know, to play your club football at Celtic, to have won a first ever league title with Celtic just a few weeks ago on the final day of the season, having had such a brilliant personal season as well, and then to go from there to representing your country. Like, you've played more times at Lansdowne Road than, you know, some of your predecessors have, 100 caps, more, never got that opportunity. To come in at, it feels, just the right time. It does sound, the way you're talking, that this is just one of those, you're living the dream.
There's honestly no better way to put it. Like I said, like, I never saw the path to me to get to Celtic. There was no representation at the time in terms of that I could see as a kid. There was no representation for me as somebody that now plays for Ireland as an Irish girl growing up, like, in terms of where the female game was in general. So now to be that representation is something that I also hold proudly, in terms of seeing the girls that turn up in their thousands to watch Ireland, and in their hundreds to watch Celtic. I think ultimately that's an even bigger role, and it's not necessarily a top you wear, but it's a way in which you hold yourself and hold yourself accountable to be that visibility for girls to be able to dream that dream. Because I can't say that I ever dreamt to play for Celtic or dreamt to play for Ireland until my later years. But to be able to be that for young girls now, I think, is ultimately the most important role that I play.
I guess the question then, looking at the quality of your performances over this camp and over previous camps, you were 28. It was your 28th birthday when you made your debut in that game against Northern Ireland. Is like, where have you been all our lives? How has it taken to 28? And you only got your international clearance, was it the day before?
Yeah, the day before, got my passport the day before.
Why did it take so long? When you mentioned earlier you're talking to your Celtic coaches, it's this dream to play for Ireland. Had you had conversations with people in the FAI over recent years? Were they aware of your eligibility? Were you pushing to get included?
I was doing everything I could in terms of, look, like, I could have all the conversations, but it was almost like Narnia to try and get involved in. Didn't really know where to start, or, to keep with the analogy, which wardrobe to go into to be able to have those conversations. But I just did everything I could on the field, doing the 1%, my sleep and my eating, to try and get the best performances to ultimately be seen by the right pair of eyes to give me those opportunities. And look, I reaped my reward when Eileen came in, but like I said before then, it was just trying to do everything I could. I know my coaches were pushing and having certain conversations, but my time came, and I'm ever so grateful for it, despite it being at a later age. I can give all I can now, and that's the main thing.
And look, it doesn't feel as though you've any regrets that you're enjoying this moment, but obviously if it happens 6 months, 12 months earlier, there's a World Cup in the mix as well. Did you ever speak with Vera Powell? Had you conversations about getting in that little bit earlier? Because she was obviously looking around post the playoff win against Scotland, and quite a few players came in the intervening period and ended up going to the World Cup. It does, again, feel, having watched your performances, like it would have been quite a natural fit for you to be a part of that group.
Yeah, no, with putting it bluntly, she just wasn't interested. And at the end of the day, all respect to her, like, football will always be, and sport will always be, a game of opinions. And what works for one coach is a five-star, might be a one-star to another coach. And that's something you've just got to take as a footballer, is that you're not everybody's cup of tea. And I respect that decision. And like I said, I'll focus on the now and see what I have at my feet now. And I won't change it for anything, despite missing out on certain opportunities. There'll be, fingers crossed, those hopefully to come.
So you've been based in Glasgow for the last few years, which was obviously the site of the playoff victory that night. Where were you that night? Where were you for the World Cup? Was it just sitting at home watching on TV and wishing you were part of it?
Yeah, like every fan. Look, although I wanted to play for this team, I was also a massive fan of this team, and I willed them to do well. Despite the little bits of disappointment, it was easy to push aside in terms of the pride, just overjoyed for the Ireland team to be on that stage, which is where they deserve to be. I actually went to their game at Hampden when they beat Scotland 1-0. Amber Barrett went through and got that goal last minute, and I was probably the only person in the Scotland stand to stand up and cheer, and I got a few dirty looks, but I was there and I was in the moment, and there was no thought of me that thought, oh, I was going to a World Cup or I'd have an opportunity. It was just purely there because it was a fairy tale come true for Ireland, and it was where they deserved to be. And look, I was just a fan, and I enjoyed that opportunity. And maybe there's a little bit within me that makes me have a bit of a chip on my shoulder and want to go out there and do even better, because I felt like I was ready. But ultimately, with it being a game of opinions, I just wasn't one coach's cup of tea, and that's fine.
You're most certainly Eileen Gleeson's cup of tea, it seems. So in the squad then for that game against Northern Ireland, like, there's such a mix in that squad of some very young players, but obviously a huge amount of experience, particularly, as you said, with the likes of Louise Quinn and Niamh Fahey and Diane Caldwell amongst the defenders. How did you find that first camp and integrating into the group?
I was very nervous because obviously I wasn't announced on the teams on the camp list, so I knew I was going in as kind of like an unidentified object, I guess, to most people. So it's kind of weird that people were a bit unsure of why I was there, which was totally fine. But look, they're a great group of girls. They obviously welcomed me with open arms and was there to listen to my story as I was there to listen to theirs, and to meet people like Louise Quinn, who I'd played against when I was previously at Lewis. We played Arsenal when she was there. And I was just in awe. I thought I was tall, but she is tall. Just to learn from people like her and Diane, and obviously then you see Katie, and then she's welcoming you. And yeah, it was like going into a family, and I was welcomed and I was grateful for that. And now I feel truly a part of it. And honestly, there's no greater feeling.
They are well used at this stage to new players coming into camp, new players from different backgrounds. When you talk about telling your story, is that something that happens quite naturally, or is there a element of standing up in front of the group and saying, here's my background, here's my connection, here's why I want this?
I wouldn't say it's invasive as standing up in front of everybody.
It's not part of an initiation ceremony or anything.
No, I'm not. And then they get you to stand on the tables and dance. No, thankfully it didn't go like that. I'm not a great public speaker or dancer, like I've just said. So you spend a lot of time together. 10 days is 30 meals together in terms of breakfast, lunch and dinner. So there's plenty of opportunities to sit and talk and listen and also tell. And that's something that ultimately brings you closer together as a team, to find out the whys of why people are fighting and why people have connections ultimately to this badge and why they play football, and finding out little things like that is just makes the connection great. And obviously, hopefully you see that on the field, but there's plenty of opportunities for stories to be told, not just those of football. So it's a great group, and it's a great group that I'm continuing to learn.
There are plenty of similarities between yourself and Louise Quinn and the position you play, the type of game you play, but also at the other end of the pitch in terms of your threat in front of goal, particularly at club level. How many goals did you score last season?
I should really find out the answer, because a lot of people ask me this. I think somebody said in a press conference it was 15, but I'm not entirely sure. So
from centre back. So is that... Are they mostly from set pieces? Do you get an opportunity to get a bit more forward on the ball? How do most of those goals happen?
I would say probably 50% are set pieces, and then 50% of them are me just going a little bit rogue as a centre-back and thinking, oh, I'm going forward here. We play a back three at club, so as long as two stay back on the run, one striker... and usually Kelly's our captain and plays middle-sided centre-back, and I'm usually just saying, Kelly, hold the fort, and I'll go I'll go running to try and get my head on the end of something. So yeah, the team make me look good. And obviously when I'm forward, they know that it's usually a ball in the air. So yeah, just something that I enjoy and don't really think it's come out in Ireland just yet. You can't necessarily go running when you're playing the likes of Sweden. So yeah, hopefully that's just something to come with my Ireland team.
So your season now, in a way, has come to an end. It's such a strange calendar that we just heard today the game against France is going to be a Porky Cueve down in Cork, the first time ever there'll be a women's international down there. You'd expect there's going to be a big crowd for that, but that's in just, a month's time, so there's not much of a break. And I don't know if you had time to celebrate the league title success, so this was Celtic's first ever league victory, and you won it on the last day of the season in fairly dramatic circumstances, having, am I right in saying, 12 months previous, lost it on the final day of the season?
Yeah, in the last seconds, we lost it. Glasgow City scored against Rangers in the final minute of the game. And I cried tears of sorrow on Celtic Park. And pretty much a year later, we scored in the last minute to make it 1-0, which meant we took the title away from Rangers. And I cried tears of joy. So only sport can do it to you, but... What a story.
Yeah, what a remarkable turnaround in the space of 12 months. And again, going back to your background, to win a league title, to be part of the first ever Celtic team to win a league title, you're playing at Celtic Park in that final game in the last minute. It really, it's going to be hard to top that.
Yeah, it was honestly just a dream come true. The nerves, I've never experienced anything like it. The build-up to it, we obviously played Rangers the week before and drew, so we knew that it was in our hands if we'd just win out, because obviously goal difference was heavily in our favour at the time. And from the beginning of the game to the end of the game, it was just a fairy tale, and it could have gone ever so different, which obviously made it ever so sweet in terms of we're hanging on and we're finding, we're pushing and we're pushing to the end. And there's a little bits of doubt that come into your mind, maybe it's not for us. But as we've done all season, the team never stops and we kept going. And Amy Gallagher thankfully put one in the bottom corner. And from there, we all went wild. And I can't tell you what happened next, because it's just emotions just take over. And it was a dream come true.
Yeah. The reason, obviously, it's Celtic's first title is that it is relatively a new thing for Celtic to have a women's team. And you mentioned Glasgow City have generally been the team that we would have heard of from Scotland. Eileen Gleeson was the Glasgow City manager. Quite a number of this Irish squad have been there at some stage. So where is the women's game in Scotland at club level, and what are Celtic doing in terms of investment?
So obviously, Glasgow City, like you say, the renowned force that are in Glasgow. So I signed here 4 years ago, and they became Celtic, announced that they were becoming professional. So I was one of the first professional players that they signed. And then Rangers obviously followed suit and did it at the same time. So it's kind of a three-horse race, although teams like Hibs and Hearts are also heavily investing. And then there's kind of a big cut-off in terms of the teams below that become semi-professional. But there's definitely at least five teams pushing and investing. And Celtic's come a long way since I first signed. It was kind of looking around thinking, is this technically classed as professional? I mean, technically it was, but there were certain standards that just weren't made. And now I can look around and say that it's full-time professional. And ultimately they give us an environment that are trying to get the best from us. And thankfully that environment was good enough to win the league this year. And from that success, we can only go on and hopefully achieve bigger and better things. But obviously we're on the Champions League stage, so finishing first will mean we're a seeded team. So hopefully you get a little easier route into the group stages. But yeah, it's come on leaps and bounds from when I was first here. And ultimately, the investment of the people of Glasgow into the women's team, I think, has shot through the roof this year. We've got a community of people that are loud and proud, and they turn up wherever we are. And there's nothing more Celtic than that, which is community. And yeah, just proud to be a part of it. And honestly, the sky's the limit for Celtic Football Club, and especially the women's side, in terms of we've got the men that are obviously so successful. Mm. So if we can just get a slight bit of that plan that they obviously have, then we'll obviously do the same things and be the most successful club in Scotland. And that's the dream.
The environment bit is the key one when you talk about the professionalism, because it's one thing to say you're full-time professional, but putting the resources into that where players get paid a proper wage, that they can act and relax in the way a professional can, that you have the rest, the recuperation, all those other things. A lot of sports are going down the full-time professional route but aren't putting those pieces in. It does sound as though what you're saying, Celtic are starting to get that together, that when you say you're a full-time professional, it is your entire life. You can dedicate your entire life and not be worrying about other things.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I came here and I signed a professional contract, but I was technically still on trial. They didn't know whether they wanted me or not, and I took the risk. And as soon as we played Rangers and we won, they kind of came over and said, "You'll get that contract now." So, so since then, it's definitely grown, and look, it's grown an astronomical amount in terms of where it was and where it is now. Is there still room for improvement? Absolutely. It's the women's game, and we can't be naive to think that it's there and it's packaged and it's the real deal. There's still obviously improvements to make, but where they are now, they're definitely investing. And like I said, as long as they continue and continue to give us that environment that ultimately breeds success, then we'll continue on the right path. But I'm definitely one for calling out things that aren't good enough, and these teams that hide behind the professionalism. I definitely think there's an element of that needs to be called out, because athletes deserve better. And ultimately, if the fans want to see a great game, then ultimately the player needs the environment to be able to give that to the fans.
What's the plan now then with the, do you get what, 2-3 weeks off?
Yes. So obviously won the league, had...
Player of the season, we should point out as well, for the second year in a row.
Yeah, that was all right, Tim. Won the league, went to camp, and now we can get a little bit of time off. I need to stay off feet for 1 or 2 weeks. So I'm going to go on holiday, enjoy that, switch off. And then obviously we come back and my first game back is against England. So a nice, easy one. So we'll be back in camp and pre-camps and be ready to go for that.
That is one of those things that does need calling out, is the schedule around the international games. That firstly, these matches were announced so late, which made it very difficult for the FAI to sell as many tickets as they would have liked to have that full-on lead-in time, but also throwing games on in the middle of July at the end of a long, hard season when you should probably still just be returning to pre-season training. How many conversations do we have around the number of ACL injuries, the number of injuries the players are picking up? And then you have a scenario like this where you're playing two of the best teams in the world at a time when your body should just be starting to come back to life for the start of the new season.
Yeah. And look, those conversations still need to be had. Obviously, there's a player welfare conversation to be had, but also, this sport that we play is sold as entertainment, and ultimately to get the best entertainment, you need the best level of football, and that's obviously given by the players that need to be in a good physical shape and also mental shape. I can't wait to not think about football and to not look at my phone and to not worry about a training session or a game coming up, and that's also just as important in terms of the mental and physical rest that's needed. But hopefully those conversations are had and it's amended correctly next year. But like I said, any opportunity to wear a Celtic or Ireland top, I'm there for it, despite the strain on the body or the mind. I'll get myself ready for it, as will my teammates.
Well, Caitlin, the last thing you needed was your first day off to be spent talking to us. Have you got yourself an Offaly jersey? You know, things are going very well for Offaly hurling at the moment.
I've seen. It's funny you should say that, because I actually followed them on Instagram and then I was like, I need one of those tops. So it's definitely going to be my next purchase.
All right. Well, listen, we've quite a few of our colleagues are from Offaly, so I'm sure they can sort something out before you're in camp next month.
There we go. That's what I need. I'll hold you to it. Or I'll hold them to it.
Caitlin, it's obviously been a brilliant season on a personal level, and, you know, some big games to come next month. So listen, the very best of luck with those, and enjoy the break.
Thank you so much, Nathan. Thank you for having me.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.